Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
All right. We ready? Yeah. Get in your seat. All right. I like where the levels are. They should keep us in good stead for the next hour or so. So are you ready? I'm ready. All right. I'll give you the three S's, countdown. You give me the tunage, and I'll give you some podtastic podcasting. How's that? All right, here we go. And, yeah, you like the levels? All right, good. Let me just make sure the microphone's set. All right. Okay, here we go. Three S's, star, smile, strong. All right, Jim, go get them. Here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. And don't forget, wherever you go to find your favorite podcast, naturally, we are there. And listening to this podcast is certainly a good thing, but, you know, we're also putting you to work. It's your job to help promote us, too. If you're not going to help promote us, who's going to, right? So get out there, send a link, send a message to anybody you know, friends, families, neighbors, strangers, anyone you have access to. Tell them why your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic and explain to them just why. Not only does it have interesting information, some laughs, some poignant points to be made, but what an amazing host. You can drop that last one if you have to. But anyway, go ahead. Send them a message. Let them know. Help spread the word. Your loyalty and your devotion is much, much appreciated. Thanks for tuning in every week, and hopefully you've been enjoying what you've been hearing for the last, well, almost 5 years now in May. We'll be hitting our fifth anniversary. Also, if you like what you're hearing, don't forget, you can go to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and you'll find all previous 245 episodes, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 246. 246. We're approaching the 250 mark and the five-year anniversary. They won't happen at the same time, but they're going to happen within a month or so. So that's pretty amazing. Never thought that that this would be lasting this long, but I'm having fun doing it, and I'm really hearing some good things from the people out there in podcasting land, listeners who enjoy the podcast every week. So if you're enjoying it and I'm enjoying it, then why not keep doing it? So once again, thank you for your loyalty and your devotion for these last several years, whether you're just a newbie, if you will, or a long-timer. Or a diehard. Maybe you've been here since podcast one. Wow, if you have been, so have I. What's the big deal? Anyway, what I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to actually talk about this last week, but I got sort of carried away off on a few different tangents, as I am wont to do. But hey, all we have is time, right? There's always another podcast. There's always another week. So whatever I don't get to 1 week, I just pass on to the next week and take care of it there. As I've said many times, this is an ongoing conversation and dialogue with you. And so, you know, sometimes conversations start out in one spot and they go 17 different directions. And then sometimes a conversation is laser focused and you talk about exactly what you want to talk about and you get in and get out. And that's great. And that's the great thing about a podcast. As I've said many times, it is what it is. And a podcast takes as long as it takes. I understand that some people might have some, time restrictions when you listen. That's fine. If you only listen for an hour a week, hopefully you hear the good stuff. But that's the great freedom of a podcast. You can do whatever you want for the most part, and there are no time constrictions. There are no commercials. There are no there's no one waving a finger at you saying, wrap it up. So there's a tangent or there's a point you want to make and really make and talk about for a while, then you just do that. And that's what I enjoy about this, the freedom of it. And you have the freedom as well, the listener, to listen as long as you want or to turn it off anytime you want, which you always have. So we both have a freedom. If you want to stick along for the ride, whether it's an hour, hour and a half, I think that's the longest I've gone. Maybe 1 hour and 45 minutes one time. But it was a fun conversation. And so that's what this is all about. It's a conversation between me and you. And when I say you, I'm speaking to you individually as well as you universally. But as you listen, my goal is to captivate just you right now. It's you and me. So I wanted to get to this, as I said earlier or last week, and I just didn't. Also, I want to mention one thing. I got a good email from a podcast listener who mentioned I knew this as I was saying it, and I knew as I went on I was saying it. But you know, I do this on the top of my head. I joke about having a script, and now I'm on page 4, and it says here, pretend as if the show is not scripted and that it is improv'd. So a lot of times I said I have ideas of what I want to talk about. I have a few little crib notes here, but for the most part, I'm just kind of talking to you, and then sometimes I'll come up with something else, and I'll go off on a little detour, but I'll make my way back. And so because I am just speaking off the top of my head, as many times as we all do, we tend to repeat perhaps certain phrases or certain adjectives and things like that. I've come to know it as verbal acne, if you will, and in the trade, that's what it is sometimes known as, and we all fall into that, right? We have these little verbal crutches that we go to either buy some time if we're thinking of a new thought, or to fill some silence, or we just have our favorite adjective. Now, I've talked about this in the past. I mean, there's a lot of verbal acne out there these days. Everybody says the word actually. Oh, my God. If you listen to television today and just listen to people talking, I mean, the word actually is thrown in for no actual reason. But once again, I'm not above that. I certainly try my best and to speak clearly and succinctly. And articulately, so that is my job, my role, right? My training. But every once in a while, when you start to sort of get off the track and you just start talking as opposed to thinking about really what you're saying, you just start to get excited about a topic, you fall into some of those verbal acne traps that you may rely on. And so apparently, at least last week, and maybe I do this a lot, I don't know, I was using the adjective amazing, apparently, quite a bit in the last podcast. And somebody wrote me a message and said, just so you know, Jim, not everything is amazing. And, you know, I heard myself saying amazing as I was saying it. But as I said, I got so caught up in the conversation a few times that was the adjective or the word that came out. And then I did realize, geez, I've been saying amazing a little too much. So I will certainly, if that is one of the words I do say quite a bit, in describing something, I will certainly take note of that. And thank you for listening so close and for the feedback. Once again, this is a dialogue, and I talk to you every week, and don't be afraid to talk to me either. So I will certainly keep that in mind, take note of that, and I appreciate the feedback. Because but I didn't want to stop the tape, right, and start over again. But I'm glad that you caught that, and I must say that I am very impressed. There are some I get some feedback from listeners on a regular basis, and One of the reasons I enjoy doing this is not simply the act of doing it and communicating and sharing with you, which is certainly a major motivation, but I'm just very moved and impressed and heartened at the at how close people listen to this, where you will pick up things or you will correct me. In fact, I just thought of something now. I had another feedback from somebody this week. Wow, I must have been off on a few tangents last week. I was. I talked about Hank Aaron last week and how he was on his plight to break Babe Ruth's home run record in the mid-70s. And I had said that Hank Aaron tied Babe Ruth's record at the end of the 1973 season and then had to wait all summer to break it in 1974. I was corrected, and I was correctly corrected, if that's a phrase. Someone said, you know, Jim, you were mistaken. Hank fell one short. He finished the 1973 season with 713 homers, and so he had to wait the whole summer or the whole winter to tie Babe and then to break it. And so I remembered off the top of my head that there was some kind of thing that happened there where he fell short at the end of the 73 season. I didn't have my Hank Aaron notes with me. I was just going off the top of my head. I remembered that there was something about him falling short. I thought he had fallen short of breaking the record the year before, but he had fallen short of tying the record. So I stand corrected. And once again, thank you very much for listening so closely and for letting me know that, because I am a stickler for correct information. And if I'm out there giving out wrong information, I'm certainly not doing it on purpose, but I certainly want to know if I have so that I can correct it. So thank you once again. So as I said before, I enjoy and look forward to your feedback, positive or negative. And I certainly have my share of positive feedback and certainly have my share of negative feedback. And that's part of the game. And I actually look forward to both. I'm not perfect here. I'm just kind of trying to talk about certain subjects, give you my view on things. You may agree with me. You may disagree with me. I certainly would love to know that. The one thing that that sadly the podcast doesn't allow is that immediate interaction between the podcaster and the podcast audience. But I certainly do appreciate any kind of feedback that you may have, positive or negative. And in this case, whether it's cleaning up my verbal acne, which I will certainly use some Stridex on my mouth and words to try to get rid of that, or just plain wrong facts that I may have thrown out there. Thank you so much for listening closely, for caring, and for getting on the computer, even if it took 5 seconds. It took 5 seconds that you could have done something else, but you took the time to communicate, and I appreciate that. So thank you very much. Anywho, we were going to talk about this, and I just ran out of time. But over the last week, I mean, I don't know about you. I don't know if it's just because we are shrouded now in this COVID countdown every day of the case, how many people have tested positive, and the total deaths in your city or in your state and nationwide and worldwide. But, you know, the last year now or so, we have been preoccupied with sickness and with death. And as much as we've tried to get through it, peer through the fog of that, it's just hovering over us. We can't help it, right? And now I don't know if it's just because we are living in this specter of illness and death that it seems that we hear about it more, but in reading the newspapers, or going online, watching the news, it just seems, I don't know if it's true or not, but the impression I'm getting is that a lot of high-profile people are passing away in greater numbers. Now, there have always been people, right? I mean, people die every day, right? But, and we always hear about that, and there's always these the little notion that, oh, well, you know, celebrity or high-profile deaths always come in threes. And, you know, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. When it happens, everybody says, see, it came in threes. When it doesn't happen, no one mentions it, which is like what happens with most superstitions. When it when a coincidence occurs and the superstition comes true, it's always pointed out. When the superstition doesn't come true, no one makes a point of it. And the fact is that most of the time the superstition does not come out. Thus why it's a superstition. But it just seems, and you know, this is another aspect of this COVID world. You know, initially, about a year ago when COVID, and now we're getting close to that year anniversary, you know, middle of March is when everything really started to shut down. We're not that far away from that now. It's been a year, and we're still, we're a little closer, but we're not all that much closer than we were a year ago. We have a vaccine, yes, but that's not rolling out. So I still think we've got still a long, long way to go. But regardless, it's been a year. And initially, when someone caught the virus, and then if someone passed away, especially a high-profile person, it was conveyed to everybody in I believe the hopes of saying, hey, this is serious, folks. We need to take this seriously. It's only the beginnings of it. This was last year. It's only the beginnings of it, but we need to take this for, you know, take this seriously, because look at, somebody died, someone that you know, maybe somebody that you revered or that you admired. I remember early on in the COVID crisis when it first started, one of my favorite musicians, John Prine, passed away. And, you know, that his wife made a point of explaining, you know, where he got it, when he got it, you know, and it seemed as if it was almost like a public service. In her grief for losing her husband, I think she was also trying to convey to people that this is serious. She witnessed it firsthand. She saw the struggle that John Prine went through at the end, and she was trying to impress on people, hey, folks, this is serious in those early days. And we didn't know a lot about it. And there's people saying that it was just like the flu and all these different kinds of stories that were coming out. Some of them based in fact, many of them not. We're still getting those today. Now on different subjects about it. Now we're getting these stories about the vaccine as opposed to the drug. So it seems like there's always conspiracy theories. But initially, when a high profile person, especially, passed away, it brought attention. It tends to bring attention. Not that a celebrity's life is worth any more than anyone else's, but it certainly, when someone passes away who is a high profile person, it does bring attention to something. If you remember, back 30 years ago, when Rock Hudson passed away from AIDS, you know, at that time AIDS was killing a lot of people, but at that time. 35 years or so ago, the homosexual community did not have the prominence. Our whole idea of diversity and inclusion, we were not where we are today. And for the most part, HIV and AIDS was viewed as a gay disease, and the mainstream didn't really need to worry about it. And meanwhile, it was ravaging people. It was devastating people's lives. It was a horrible death sentence for millions of people. And yet, as a society, we really didn't pay all that much attention for a long time, sadly. But then Rock Hudson passed away, and he died of AIDS. And here was somebody that was a major movie star who was admired for decades, and suddenly it put a face on it and brought attention to it. And then later on, Ryan White, if you remember Ryan White, who was a teenager in the mid-80s, he had contracted HIV and AIDS through a contaminated a blood transfusion in the early days before blood was filtered, before AIDS was even known about, that it was passed through blood. He was, 13 years old? 14 years old? 13. in 1984, and he faced tremendous prejudice and hate through the ignorance that people had of the disease at that time, because it didn't the news of it and information about it and the science of it was not getting through to the mainstream, because it was viewed, as I said before, a gay disease, and the mainstream didn't care about it. And the plight of homosexuals at that time, it was not as prominent as it is today. If you weren't around, you might have a hard time figuring or understanding that. But believe me, and all you have to do is go back and read some stories or look at some, you know, old footage of news, and you'll see. But when a prominent person passes away from something, suddenly it brings attention to it. And another thing that happened with AIDS, not only was the death of Rock Hudson helped the awareness of AIDS and maybe people taking a look at it in a different way. Ryan White certainly was an ambassador of how to have the disease with dignity and class. And sadly, he succumbed at 18. But then a major shift happened when Magic Johnson, the basketball player, came down with HIV. Now, this wasn't just, you know, some old actor or some little kid from Indiana. This was a major sports icon and legend. And so now a lot of people paid attention, because this was someone that a lot of people in the moment had enjoyed and idolized, and suddenly people had to confront this, like, whoa, what is this? Now, you know, more power to him. Magic Johnson still alive and as healthy as ever. Thankfully, as more attention came to HIV and AIDS, more funding came to it, as people started to say, hey, we've got to fight this disease as opposed to just letting it kill people. At that time, it was viewed as, well, that's the disposable part of the society anyway, so who cares? That sadly was a viewpoint in the early 80s and mid 80s about AIDS. Even President Reagan, up until the mid 80s, didn't even talk about AIDS, even though it had started in the early part of the 80s, right when his presidency started. So there was a lot of denial. There was a lot of ignorance. There was just a lot of prejudice, misinformation, misunderstanding. And however, through celebrities bringing attention to it, the perspective and the outlook and the overall viewpoint on HIV and AIDS suddenly shifted. And of course, another major player in this was Lady Diana, who was a huge AIDS activist, and she really changed the game in around 1987 or so, where she went to visit AIDS patients in a hospital, and she shook the hand of an AIDS patient without gloves on. And the picture made it around the world, and she was showing that these are people too. And you know what? All these horror stories you're hearing about how you contract AIDS are not true. There's science to this. And, well, isn't that an interesting and familiar phrase? There's real science to back things up, and there's a lot of false information, and you have to believe the science, not the false information. Back at that time, people thought you caught AIDS in a variety of ways, which was just not true. And men, people thought you could just touch, if you touched an AIDS patient, you would get AIDS. And so Lady Di really made a huge difference when she purposely shook this man's hand and hugged an AIDS patient without any bodily covering to show that, no, it's not a disease that is passed by contact, simply. It's through the passage of fluids. And so by shaking someone's hand or hugging them, you're not going to catch AIDS. And that picture, and because of the respect and the admiration and her celebrity, whatever you want to call it, when she did that, then a lot of people who admired her said, well, wait a minute, maybe I need to rethink my views. So a lot of these things happen. But as I said, sadly, in our society, it takes those celebrities to do that. Good or bad, but at least it happens. And so, and ironically, Dr. Fauci was, you know, was a major player during the HIV, you know, epidemic when it started, and still is involved in that because it's an infectious disease. That's what the guy does. So he's got quite a track record. He's been around in this game for a long time. And now, as I said before, Magic Johnson is in good health. We see that because of the attention, because of the prevention programs, because of the educational programs and the treatment. AIDS is not gone. AIDS is not cured, but at least it's not a death sentence. It used to be a terminal death sentence. There was no question about it. If you had AIDS, you were going to die. But now we have medical therapies that people take, that at least they can live with the disease. That came because of the awareness that was brought on by celebrities. So as I said before, this the whole COVID situation, early on, when someone passed away, a celebrity passed away from COVID, people would say, yes, he died or he or she died of COVID. And I think in many ways it was a way to get the word out, to bring attention to this. Like, folks, this is serious. This is not the flu. This can be fatal. And there are many, you know, at this, and still, we still don't know, a year later, all the ramifications of COVID, short-term and long-term. We're still learning. But now it seems, a year later, that when someone passes away, it seems as if the first news we hear is they didn't die of COVID. There seems to be a stigma now that if you die of COVID, that you're somehow viewed in a different way, and so celebrities now are well, they didn't really die of COVID. Everybody's quick, you know, their official statements are quick to say they didn't die of COVID. And I don't understand why that stigma exists. As I said before, we need to know. And we need to take this seriously. And if celebrities can bring attention to this, whether they have been diagnosed or sadly if they pass away or whatever, all the better, because we're clearly still almost a year later in a huge misinformation and or just irresponsibly acting irresponsibly, whether we want to take this information seriously or not. But, you know, we're not any closer of getting rid of this virus than we were a year ago. And the numbers have fallen, yes, and they have fallen because it's cold and people aren't going outside. But if we start to open places up again, they're going to go up again. If people start to congregate, they're going to get up. They're going to go up again, just like they did at the holidays. It's just a fact. But when I was noticing, I'm noticing a lot of celebrities passing away on a more regular basis. And I have to say, even though everybody's quick to say the official statements that they didn't die of COVID. Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, we all die because our heart stops. But there's also an underlying reason for that. You know, Elvis Presley died of cardiac arrest because his heart couldn't beat anymore because of all of the prescription drugs that were in his system. Yes, he died because his heart stopped. He had a heart attack. But if he hadn't been taking drugs at an incredible rate, his heart wouldn't have stopped. So that wasn't the cause of death. Everybody's cause of death is that their heart stops. So I'm seeing, as I'm reading a lot of these celebrities passing away, I'm seeing that they're passing away and it's vague. Oh, what they passed away from has not been disclosed. And I'm thinking that there is some stigma now. Like, all of a sudden, we went from wanting to tell people that someone passed away from COVID to help raise the awareness of the severity of this. But somewhere along the way, because I think it got so politicized, we're now jumping away from it. And people don't want to talk about it or admit that someone passed away. But it seems to me there's a lot of people passing away. Now, granted, a lot of them are older. But at the same time, who's the most susceptible to pass away from COVID? In the last couple of weeks, we had two Hall of Fame pitchers, Don Sutton from the Dodgers and from the Brewers, and Phil Niekro, a Hall of Famer, pitched with many teams, was a famous knuckleballer. We just had Hank Aaron, who I talked about last week. Once again, people in their 70s and 80s, I get it. I understand, but you know, in today's world, being 75 is not old. Being 80 is not old. 30, 40, 50 years ago, wow, what a life you led. But now people are living well into their 80s and into their 90s and sometimes into their 100s, even past 100. We've seen that. So when someone passes away at 75, and in the midst of this pandemic, you have to wonder. But yet for some reason, we're not hearing. Oh, well, and then you hear this. Oh, they had a cardiac this or a cardiac that. Well, you know, so I don't know. But over the last, so there's been those sports figures. But also in the acting world, Cloris Leachman passed away. Cicely Tyson passed away. Screech, Dustin Diamond from Saved by the Bell passed away. Now, he was said that he had Stage 4 cancer. He found about, my gosh, he went to the hospital apparently with 3 or 4 days later, a week later, he passed away. So he obviously wasn't looking at the signs. And then legendary broadcaster Larry King passed away. Now, Larry King was in his late 80s, 87, I believe. They did say that he went into the hospital with COVID. And at one time he was in ICU. Then he got out of the ICU, and it looked like once again, good old Larry was going to beat this, and then all of a sudden we found out he passed away. Well, what was interesting was his estranged wife, I don't know if he officially got divorced from his wife, Sean, but she came out and then tried to shed more light on Larry's death, because initially people were saying he died of COVID, and she said, well, he really didn't die of COVID. He died of sepsis. Which is an infection getting into your system and just shutting down your organs, and it can kill you very quickly. You don't want to get sepsis. You really don't. Well, a lot of times where people get this infection, ironically, is after they've been in the hospital for a while. Because, you know, hospital is a great place to hopefully get healed, but you're also around a lot of viruses and bacteria and things like that, and there are the times when, sadly, someone goes in for something minor to a hospital, but then while they're there, they wind up getting an infection. So, you know, Larry King's wife says, well, Larry didn't die of COVID. He died of sepsis. Well, I don't know. Why do we need to make this distinction unless there's some stigma to this? Because, in fact, Larry did die of COVID. Because if Larry didn't get COVID, Larry doesn't go into the hospital. Now, I don't know all the particulars of this. I mean, I'm extrapolating here. Maybe I'm maybe off base. But and I've had somebody, a close friend, who went to the hospital with a minor ailment, and then while he was in the hospital, died within a week after his surgery because he got sepsis, this infection. So I know a little about it, not a lot. I'm not pretending to be an authority, but you know, for her to say he didn't die of COVID, well, okay, not officially, right? But if he hadn't caught COVID, he wouldn't have gone to the hospital, and if he hadn't gone to the hospital, he probably would not have gotten this sepsis infection. So yes, I don't understand what the stigma is here for COVID now, but Larry King, COVID contributed to his death. We have to say that. If you don't want to say he died of COVID, like he beat it. Well, yeah, he beat it, but he didn't, because the COVID clearly compromised his system, allowing an infection to get in, which killed him. But once again, the dominoes started because he got COVID. Without COVID, he's not in a hospital. He's not exposed to other infections that might invade him and ultimately kill him. So I was like, why are you, what's the stigma here? But what I wanted to talk about really was my Larry King story. If you listen to me with any kind of regularity, I usually have some stories about someone, right? I don't know why, but I do. And I have a Larry King story. And it's kind of funny and kind of interesting. It's kind of funny, but I don't want to make light of it too much because it was somewhat serious for a second there. But it also shows that this guy, even though he was very small in stature, very small, slight guy, he lived to be 87, and he actually did beat COVID. He was getting better. He got out of the ICU. So this guy was a fighter. So my Larry King story is about, 84? Yeah, oh, wow. Well, about 6.5 years now, maybe just a little over 6. Larry King hosted the Museum of Communications annual Radio Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And Larry came to Chicago to host it. And that was when you could get together and actually have a ceremony. So I was at the ceremony. And it's an interesting, fun thing. And at that time, I was working with Gary Meyer, and Gary was inducted with one of his former partners, Steve Dahl, into the Hall of Fame as a duo. And so we went to the induction ceremony, and we were sitting at a table right near the where the podium was, you know, where the dais was, where Larry was hosting. And so he was on a simple riser, you know, to be above the audience, not on the floor, so you could see him because he wasn't a tall guy. And it wasn't very long or wide, but it certainly wasn't a plank. You know, he wasn't walking the plank. But, you know, it was a dark black stage with black curtains behind it, you know. And so Larry is, you know, and there's stairs there. And because the people would have, you know, the inductees and inductors would walk up the stairs right by the podium and give their speeches. So Larry is, you know, he gets a hello. That was the Larry King laugh. I couldn't do Larry King's voice, although I sort of could. All you have to do, he's sort of from Brooklyn, and he always thought I'd talk like this. He liked, hey, there's a person over here. He sort of sounded, when he wanted to sound like he was really, you know, cool, he would play up his Brooklyn accent. He kind of sounded a little like, you know, Jackie Mason. There's a person over here, and I don't know. He wasn't that bad, though. He wasn't that thick, you know, of a Brooklyn accent. But whenever he wanted to sort of sound cool, he would always sort of start to talk like this, you know, hey, what da da boo, da 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 ba ba ba. So Larry was going about his, and once again, Larry, you say whatever you want about Larry King, but very engaging, funny, good storyteller, good, nice, deep voice. So he had everything, you know. Wasn't the greatest looking guy in the world, but it didn't matter. He was married 8 times. All of his wives were very pretty. He went out with one of his famous dalliances was with Angie Dickinson, who was one of Hollywood's great beauties for, you know, 40 years. And he married his, you know, his last wife. Sean was a very pretty woman, another actress. So Larry did fine with the ladies, even though he wasn't, you know, Cary Grant or Robert Redford. You know, he was, and Larry was really a perfect example of how important in any kind of profession timing is. Timing is so key, and timing is something that you can't plan for. You can have a great plan, but if you don't have timing or a little luck, the plan just isn't going to work. That's just how it is. You always need to be lucky, and that's the great intangible. And Larry was certainly worked hard, but where Larry was lucky and his timing was perfect was Larry was on the air. He had a nationally syndicated radio show, but it was on overnights. It wasn't in every city, but it was nationwide. So in many cities across the country, Larry was on. So if you were in, you know, California or New York or Chicago or Iowa or wherever it was, he would always say, "Toronto, Ontario, hello," you know, wherever he used to take phone calls. But Larry had this show that was broadcast late overnight. So an interesting audience to begin with, the late night overnight audience, because while it not may not be big, what is, and I've done that shift, you know, on and off, what is fun about it and what's interesting about it is the people who are listening at that time are very loyal, very captive listeners. They're either up at that late hour from, you know, say noon or say midnight to 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning because either they are getting home from work, maybe they're a third shifter, or maybe they have insomnia, or maybe they are getting up to go to work, or maybe they just like to stay up and listen. Who knows what it is? Maybe the kid is, you know, the baby is crying, and so, you know, they start listening to the radio because the kid's going to be up in a couple, 20 minutes crying again. For whatever the reason, people, it's not a big audience, but it's a very loyal, captive audience. And so it's fun to talk to them because you can create a nice rapport because the same people do listen on a regular, daily, nightly basis. So Larry had a very strong core audience. May not have been very big. He was not certainly a major national personality with that show, but he certainly had a very strong audience and a very strong cult following of the people who were up at that time. And so in the early days of CNN, and yes, folks, there was a time when there wasn't a CNN. If you're younger, I understand you don't even understand what that means, but there was a time when there was not 24-hour news. So in the early days of CNN, when they were looking for personalities with an audience who can attract people, Larry, despite not being a very good-looking guy, was approached because he did have a very good following. He had something of a name recognition. He had a loyal audience. And so CNN was looking for people in those early days who can deliver an audience. They didn't care what Larry looked like. In today's world, Larry King, for as good as he was as a broadcaster, and he was a very good broadcaster, he never gets that job as the Larry King show on CNN as a TV talk show host. He just doesn't get it. Not because he wasn't good, not because he doesn't have the talent, but because in today's world, looking like Larry King, he would never even be thought of. But back then, look, we've always been a cosmetic society, but being on television 40 years ago was not as dependent on your physical appearance as it is today. Today, that's all that counts. And you could see there's some people that don't deserve to be on television in any kind of, I mean, we'll look at reality television. We'll look at The Bachelor and Bachelorette. These people are not on because they're brain surgeons. They're good-looking people. We have become a much more visually and shallow society in terms of rewarding just good-looking people. We've always done that. You know, Cleopatra, you know, right? I mean, it's not, there's nothing new. But my point is, 40 years ago or so, to get on television, your look was certainly important, but it wasn't the be-all and end-all, which is it is today. Many people are on TV for what they look like as opposed to what they can deliver. That's just true. And if they can read off a teleprompter, that's all that they need. So Larry King, perfect timing. he had this radio show which gave him great exposure and gave him a solid audience that when a major, at the time, not a major network yet, but a budding network was looking for somebody with a solid audience that could bring viewers, they said, well, let's give Larry King a try. And even though he wasn't the best looking guy, he got the gig, and then his broadcasting skills took over and overcame whatever physical thing. So it didn't matter what Larry King looked like now, because we liked Larry King. But my point is the timing aspect for Larry King's career is that he came in at a time when his audience and his content meant more than his looks. Whereas today, I don't know if that's the case. But anyway, he certainly made the best and most and far exceeded whatever the opportunity was. He became an icon in broadcasting. Now, I also think it was funny what Larry always said that, you know, he felt that his interview style was such that he was inquisitive, which any journalist is. You have to be. That's what makes you go into this. That's why you want to get to the heart of it. You keep asking questions, or you wonder why is that. I mean, that's part of your training, and that some of it is innate as well. So Larry, I always thought it was interesting. He would say, "Well, you know, I don't really do a lot of preparation for my interviews because I want to be fresh. I don't want to be clouded by what I think or what I know. I just want to react like the viewer would. I want to ask the question that the viewer would ask, and if I know too much, I won't be thinking like a person. I'll be thinking like a journalist." There's some validity to that, don't get me wrong, but it's also a really nice excuse for being lazy and not having to do any research and not having to read the author's book or see the star's film. So you can just sort of stroll in at 10 minutes before and sit down and go, okay, who am I interviewing today? Okay, Marlon Brando? Okay, fine. You know, and just go from there. So I always thought that was interesting. The great thing about Larry King, once again, not a great interviewer per se, but engaging and charismatic. No question about that. He would engage you. He's a great storyteller. But Larry King, his show on television was more impressive, and it was on for 20, 30 years, right? So, you know, once again, I'm not, you have to give the guy props. There's no question about that. But his show itself, the actual meat of the show, wasn't as impressive as his guest list. His guest list was top of the line, because as the show continued to gain in popularity, everybody and anybody wanted to get on that show because of Larry's audience and ratings. So Larry got the primo guests. There's no question about that. Whether it was politicians, you know, newsmakers and current events, celebrities, sports figures, whatever it was, Larry did have an impressive guest list, no question. But then I think because of the lack of preparation and this kind of, well, I just want to wing it kind of thing, I also believe that when he got the person there, I don't really remember a Larry King interview that really changed anything. One of his famous interviews, if you go online, you'll see one of the famous interviews was he interviewed Marlon Brando toward the end of his career, and he and Marlon kissed on the lips. Okay, well, but that's not an interview, right? So while Larry got, you know, you can be impressed by who he got in the chair, but then the journalistic side of this is like, but what did you do when you had them? I don't remember any great revelations or any great moments of, wow, did Larry, like Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes or some of the great interviewers or Barbara Walters. You know, even though her interviews weren't the hardest hitting, but there were memorable moments when she got people to say or admit things on the radio. Howard Stern in the last 15 years has gotten people to share and reveal things that they might not have ever done before. He got them to get, you know, these other people, let got the celebrity get their let their guard down. But Larry, because I think he didn't really do a lot of research, his questions were superficial and it allowed those celebrities, those newsmakers, to stay on their talking points and maybe let their guard down and maybe say things and offer some perspectives or offer some information that they maybe would not have. So once again, I'm not trying to put Larry down. He was able to get the top people, but I also think that he was known more for who he had in his chair than what he did with them in his chair. But regardless, you know, you cannot dispute his success and his abilities, and he certainly became the preeminent or one of the preeminent media celebrities in history. So back to my Larry King story. So Larry, of course, he's in his, I mean, when Larry is, you know, in this situation here to being a host of an event, you could see that Larry was in his element. He loved it. He had an audience. He didn't have to share the microphone with anybody. He could tell jokes. He could tell his stories. He could talk with his Brooklyn accent when he wanted to. Larry loved it. And that was a guy that is another thing that I always appreciated about him is he enjoyed his job. This guy was everywhere because he enjoyed being with and among people. He enjoyed being with a spotlight on him. He enjoyed being in front of a mic. And he would be at the opening of a grocery store in Iowa if there was going to be an audience there. So he was right in his element, and I could see that just watching him. I'm like, this guy loves what he does. At that time, he was in his early 80s, and he was still sharp and together and funny. I mean, he was Larry King. He had not missed a beat, except. And I think at the time, if I remember, he always had some health issues. He was not a very well man. He was a big smoker. He had a lot of heart problems. I think around this time, if I remember correctly, he may have just recovered from something, you know, in the near future, some serious ailment. I'm not really sure. He certainly was beginning to slow down. I mean, he was in his early 80s, but he was still sharp. But you could see he was getting on the fragile side. You know, I mean, 80 years old is 80 years old. So he's up there just, you know, waxing, poetic, being Larry King, telling stories, you know, he's, you know, Mr. Bon Vivant, raconteur. And I can't remember exactly who he was introducing. But as I said, the stage he was on was all black. The flooring itself was, the riser was black. The curtains in the back were black, right, you know, where the back of it was. And Larry steps either, I believe, you know, I think someone was maybe walking up the stairs and Larry was by the podium. And I believe, if I remember correctly now, he was like stepping behind the podium to let the person in. And because the stage was black and the curtains behind were black, it was hard to tell how deep this stage went and when it just dropped off. Well, all of a sudden, Larry takes a step and falls behind the stage. And we're all watching this because we're watching the next inductee or inductor come up. So everybody's attention is at the podium. And then suddenly, Larry topples. Larry disappears. And there's this thud. And there's this 80-year-old guy that just fell. And everybody's just like, because he just disappeared behind this. It was like a magic trick. He just disappeared behind the black curtain. Because clearly, the stage did not go that far back, and Larry didn't know that, and he took a step back, and he just fell backward off the stage and disappeared. And so for a good minute or so, or 2 minutes, no one knew what the heck happened to Larry. Did he break a leg? Did he break a hip? Was he dead? Who knew what happened? And so there was this moment of fear like, and just this quiet. And then suddenly, more power to you, Larry. Larry just gets up and his head pops up and he walks around up the stairs and says, I'm fine. And he just keeps going. And I'm like, wow, I thought we lost Larry. I thought we were going to be in a history-making moment. I was seeing the headline already. You know, talk show host, legendary Larry King, you know, falls off stage and passes away. I thought we were going to be in history. But so then after that, he made fun of it, and there was a big sigh of relief. But it was just, and now to tell the story, it's kind of funny that Larry, because I could close my eyes right now and just visualize him taking the step back and disappearing. And it was just, whoa, what the hell, where did Larry go? And then you realize the seriousness of it. But then when he came back, you're like, phew. So thankfully, I did not see Larry King die. But man, for a second there, I thought I did. But I had to give him a lot of credit because he was, you know, once again, the ultimate performer, the ultimate trooper. I don't know if he was sore or what happened to him, but he found his way out from behind where he fell, and he came back out from that behind the curtain and walked back up the stairs and said, "I'm fine, folks. Let's keep going." Everybody clapped and stuff like that, and so there was a moment of fear, and then it was a moment of laughter. You can look at it now and laugh about it, but man, when it happened, it was scary. I really thought I saw the end of Larry King. But I have to say, it was cool. I didn't get a chance to say hi to him, nothing big, but just got a chance to shake his hand. And he was the real deal. And as I said, he hosted this thing. I'm sure he just had a few little notes in front of him, just like I do. He wasn't scripted because we know Larry didn't like to prepare. But he was able to effortlessly host this thing and survive what could have been a very, very serious fall. And I know from personal experience, unfortunately, what it's like to fall off of a stage, because I was in a play about 6 years ago, and the same thing happened to me. Now, you see, this is the other thing, folks. You talk about superstitions or whatever. Be careful when you laugh at people. Didn't your mom always tell you that? Be careful when you laugh at people, because, you know, it could, you know, karma could come back and bite you. Now, I don't remember if I really made fun of or laughed at when Larry King fell off the stage. But maybe in the karmic world, I did laugh and make fun just enough for me to have the karma come back and bite me. In my case, not in the butt, but bite me in the Achilles tendon. I was in a production of a play called Wait Until Dark. If you've ever seen the film, there's a film version of it. It was started out as a play, but the film most people have seen, or it's been around. If you haven't, check it out. It's a great, great suspense film with Audrey Hepburn and Alan Arkin and Richard Crenna. And it's a great kind of mystery suspense thriller. Wait Until Dark. You can find it on, I'm sure, somewhere streaming. It's on, you know, Turner Classic Movies. But if you ever see it, if you've never seen it, or if you haven't seen it in a while, check it out. It's a great, great film. Wait Until Dark. So I was in the play, and I was playing the lead villain. And there was a scene where I had a knife, and these two other guys were coming at me. And I was backing up, and then I got backed up against a kitchen sink, and I dropped my knife because they had pinned me against this cabinet in this kitchen counter. And so we had rehearsed this on stage, you know, for 3 weeks or so, and I, you know, they came at me, and I had to, you know, back up and navigate around a kitchen table and then get upended by the sink and in the counter. Well, on opening night, they didn't put the table in the spot it was supposed to be. And there's something called spiking. You know, when you in a play, where the props go, where it's been decided, where this is where the table's going to be, and this is where the chairs are. They put little pieces of tape so they can always put those props in the same exact spot where they're supposed to go. Because of something like this, where, you know, if there's some kind of a stunt, you need to know where that is. Well, they had painted the stage the night before after it was all scruffed up after rehearsals, and so the spike marks for the table were not there. Those tape marks were not there, and when whoever put it back, they put the table back in the wrong spot. They put it back like almost right next to the edge of the stage. Well, I was not aware of that, and so I had been rehearsing this part of the play. I'm supposed to walk around the edge of the stage or the edge of this table to get cornered. Well, with the table now only a foot away from that, and me not knowing that, I literally backed up and fell off the stage backward. Very similar to Larry King. The only difference was, and this is where karma may have played a role, and I learned my lesson, I guess. I don't know if I learned my lesson, but I certainly learned about karma, if there is such a thing. But I fell off the stage backward. I was in shock as to why I fell off the stage, because I couldn't figure out why. I've been doing this for 3 weeks, going around this table. Why did I fall off the stage? Until I realized later what happened. But like Larry, I was able to get myself back up on the stage and finish not only the scene, which was only the first 20 minutes of the show, of a 2.5-hour show. I finished the entire show, which had a lot more other stunts in it. My foot, my ankle, blew up like a balloon. I later found out that I seriously injured, didn't tear it, but may have ripped it to some extent, my Achilles tendon, which wound up being at least a 6 to 7 week ordeal. I didn't have surgery on it. It healed on its own, but I had a cast, I had a boot. But I, just like Larry King, fell off a stage. Unlike Larry King, and I don't know, maybe he was bruised, I don't know, but maybe like Larry King. For all we know, Larry was really seriously hurt, but you know what? He didn't let you know it. He made a joke, and he continued, and maybe he was hurt. Maybe he was really seriously injured, you know, something like that. I don't know what happened. But all I know is that night, he got up, he got back on the stage, and he finished. And I did the same thing. So maybe Larry did get hurt. But at least, you know, once again, you got to be a trooper. The show must go on. But in that moment, I knew what it was like to be Larry King. At least I know now. I didn't think about that right now then, but I did now. I just thought about, in fact, when I was telling the story. So I had something, you know, and I have a lot in common with Larry King. Not only do we're both broadcasters, but we both fell off a stage in front of an audience and got back on and live to tell the tale. So Larry, wherever you're at, heaven, hello. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com. And we're also found wherever you go to download your favorite podcast. Tell your friends, send them a link, send them a message that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck isn't it theirs? Your loyalty and your devotion is much, much appreciated. Hope you've enjoyed listening to episode number 246. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. Larry King, hello. Heh 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 heh.